You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. HuntStand is the most popular and functional mobile hunting app on the market. With a variety of base maps to choose from, satellite imagery that is updated every month, the ability to check the weather, know property information, and even catalog your trail cam pics, HuntStand even gives you the ability to import pins and location markers from other mobile apps. Visit HuntStand.com or download wherever you download your apps. Enter discount code SN20 at checkout for 20% off.
The Houndsman XP Podcast Network is taking you on the journey. Your host, Master Trainer Heath Hyatt, will combine his decades of experience as a houndsman and as a professional trainer that will light the path forward and make our packs lighter on this lifelong journey to become better hunters and houndsmen. There are no shortcuts, so lace up those boots and grab a dog leash. The journey begins now.
Hey guys, the journey on Houndsman XP is teamed up with Go Wild. Go Wild is a social media platform that was made for hunters by hunters. If you guys and gals have listened to any of the other podcasts that I've been on, you know what a huge outdoor enthusiast I am. I love being in the woods with my hounds. There's nothing more exciting than hearing the thunder of a spring gobbler. I love fishing for trout in the brooks and the streams, and I love being on the river chasing that ever-elusive fish of a thousand casts, the muskie. Go Wild is the place that I can post my trophies, hunts, and memories without being censored. But Go Wild is so much more than that. It's a place to share your stories, sharpen your skills, hone your tactics, get gear reviews, and shop for anything outdoors. When you make a purchase from the Go Wild store, everything is free shipping. Anything that you purchase anywhere in the country, no matter how big, free shipping. So go down to the show notes, click on the Go Wild link at the bottom, and get signed up today. And let's go wild. Today on the journey, we are going to do a pup date. We're going to recap where the pups are at, what they're doing, who's doing what, how old they are, some of the things that I have done with them. So Chris is joining me, and we're going to do some recaps. He's been down. He's seen the pups. And we're going to go over some other things. And I'm going to kind of give you guys an update on a trip that I just took, probably one of the better trips that I've taken in my adult life for sure. And I'm very envious of the people, the listeners that live out west. Like, that's kind of where my heart wants to be, especially after I've been out west several times. But so we took a trip to Yellowstone and Grand Tetons, and it was absolutely, you know, phenomenal. And my heart kind of goes out to the people that's there now with the flooding, and I know some of the campers and stuff are stuck in the park and can't get out. And when I watched those videos, like, I mean, I was on that road, I was across that bridge, you know, I was down that valley. So, I mean, it's very fresh in my mind. Like I said, we just got back last week, spent 9 days out there. And like I said, I'm very fortunate that we got to see and had the opportunity to visit and do the things we did. And like I said, now the people that's out there is kind of, getting rained on and flooded and stuck and everything else. So
if you're going to be stuck somewhere, I mean, why not?
It would be a good place to be stuck, except the grizzly bears. We seen plenty of those while we were out there. So
yeah, you were sending me pictures back and of hiking up these trails and stuff. And
I'll tell you,
if you're going to have any grizzly engagements.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story when we get into it, but it is when Alan Jackson says it's hotter than a hoochie coochie in Virginia, It's hotter than a hoochie coochie. I got up this morning and my windows, for you guys that have the humidity, they're completely fogged up. There's dew coming off of them. I looked at the temperature gauge. It was 76. So I don't know what the humidity is at this point, but it is hot. I feel like when I walk out the door, I feel like I'm down at the beach. It's so, the humidity is so high. It's so hot here. Tried to fish for a couple hours yesterday and I just couldn't take it. Like, it was so hot.
You told me you were going fishing. And I was like, and I told you then, I was like, the only way I'd be fishing today is if I was wading. Well, you know, I would not, I used to sit in those patrol boats on days like we're having right now. And it was miserable. We used to work a thing called the Madison Regatta. It's a hydroplane race. And it was so hot one year that we actually took the boat, the patrol boat, and we ran the, you know, the boat patrol and security and blah, 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 all that stuff. But we had to take the boat and get upstream and we peeled our gun belts and we had to get in the water.
Yeah. Well,
you know, it was that hot.
There was a,
let me tell this real quick. The thing that always drove me crazy about doing boat patrol is you'd pull up to these people that were out there, you know, they had a cooler of beer and they had a tube and they were doing all this boating and I'm sitting there. I mean, I'm wearing a body armor on the boat in uniform with a gun belt, just sweating. I couldn't even write. If I had to write a ticket, the sweat absolutely ran down my face and onto the ticket where you couldn't write it. So that was one thing. But then people would say, man, I think it'd be cool to have your job. You get to come out here and boat and everything out. And I just look at them like, are you freaking crazy?
Not in all that gear.
No, it was horrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was horrible. I hated boat patrol.
Yeah. But yeah, I had a purpose yesterday. We had went out Friday night to do a little catfishing. And Maddie wanted a musky fish for a little while. And so she was throwing some musky lures. She got hung up, which typically she's really good about. When you get hung up with a musky plug, you just hit your release button. You get the boat back up and you go get your plug. Well, I think she waited a little long before she said, Dad, I'm stuck. I'm stuck. Well, by the time I could hit the trolling motor to stop us and try to get back up, the line just snapped. And I'm like, oh, I mean, if you guys musky fish, you know how expensive those lures are. And
how much are they?
This one was $30, which is on the cheaper end of, if you're getting custom stuff built, they're a lot higher, but I have not bought a musky lure this year. I'm proud of myself because last 2 years I've bought way more than I should have. So trying to use what I got. If I can't catch them on what I got, then I probably don't need to buy any more. But anyway, yeah. I went back yesterday and run into one of my buddies. He was actually down there fishing and he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, trying to find this lure that we lost Friday night. And the water had went down. It was really low. The water was clear. So we started searching the ledge and went across the river. So I just started trolling and working that ledge out. Well, I ended up finding the lure. So anyway, we got in and was able to get the lure out and it had my leader and everything on it. So I was tickled to death. So, yeah, we did get in the water, but the water, honestly, it was 69.1 degrees, which is, you know, it stays up in the 70s in the summer, and as hot as it's been, I thought the water would have been warmer, but it was still a little cool. You'd think 69 is not, you know, cool, but it is. So,
yeah, anyway, that's Olympic pool type temperature there.
Yeah, but I did get my lure back. I fished for a couple hours. Got a little too much sun and come back and had to get an air condition. It was just too hot.
Yeah, I'm looking at custom musky lures right now, and we're looking at $59 and up.
Yes, most of them. Yeah. One of my favorite lures is it's $60, and I have like five of them. And I catch more fish off of that one than I do anything else. And I've had to replace a couple because, man, when they get smashed, that musky and all those teeth, like it will destroy a lure. Like it will destroy it. So
can you refurbish them or anything? Can you hand paint them like the old plugs?
Well,
or?
if they're molded, or wood, yes. Mm-hmm. But this one is a poured plastic. Yeah. So once they rip it, now I've got, you've got this stuff called Mend It, which you can put on there. If the tooth cuts it or something, you can put the Mend It in it. But after so many times of doing that, it just really, like the last muskie I caught in November, she was big. Like she literally just crinkled the lure up and twisted it. And it just, she ripped the tail half off of it. So when the tail's off, that's what you really like, is that thump, yeah, thump, 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 thump in the water. So, mm-hmm, but yeah, you can fix them sometimes. And then, like I said, and you know that one of the guys, Toby, that hunts with us, yeah, Toby and I fish a lot, and he makes his own stuff, and he's very good. And it's his lure that I am very partial to. Like that's been my best. That's been my most confident lure is the ones that he's makes. And, so, mm-hmm, yeah. So let's recap my trip out west, and we'll get into these puppies and what they're doing. If y'all can't hear them barking, I know that one of them's outside baying at something. I'm not sure what it's baying, yeah, at. So yeah, we took a trip to Yellowstone. We flew into, Idaho Falls and drove up, and we stayed right outside of West Yellowstone. And like I said, I've been to Montana. I've been to Glacier twice. You know, I've been through most of Idaho, over the years. Now I haven't been down to Idaho Falls or Boise, and I'll tell you about that excursion here in a little bit. But
yeah, yeah, I know this story.
we flew into Idaho Falls and drove up, and we rented a cabin, stayed there, really nice. We was 20 minutes out of the park. And the first morning we get out there, we fly out on Saturday, wake up Sunday morning, there's 2.5 inches of snow, which we knew the weather was going to be chilly. The highs were in the 50s, 55s. So we packed accordingly, wake up and 2.5 inches of snow on the first morning. And come to find out, we rented a Tahoe, and we get in the Tahoe and we go to pull out of the driveway. And I'm like, hey, is this thing four-wheel drive? And we're all looking around, and guess what? It's two-wheel drive.
You got a two-wheel drive. Oh, man.
And we had to go through a pass to get over to where we needed to be. So anyway, it all worked out. The roads weren't as bad as we thought, and they cleared up pretty good. So we went into the west side of the park, which takes you into Madison Junction, and we spent the first day on the north end of the park up towards Mammoth Springs and that area, and around towards Roosevelt Junction. The wildlife is just absolutely, for me, that was one of the biggest things. Bison. And, you know, coming from the East Coast, we have buffalo farms everywhere. We've got them, you know, I can take you within an hour drive of my house to at least 3 different buffalo farms. I didn't realize there was a difference in buffalo and bison, and there is.
What is it?
So the bison have a bigger hump on their back. They're a little bit bigger. Their heads are blockier, and they have that beard hanging down underneath their chin. Mm-hmm. So the buffalo here are definitely not. I mean, they're not as big. If you go up to Waiteville to that one buffalo farm, I mean, you can see it. I mean, I can tell now that I've seen a bison. And so bison, we got into bison road jams about every day. They'd either walk
them horns in the road,
huh?
Them horns will hook you.
Well,
you remember P.I. saying that on Lonesome Dove?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Gus was saying, let's go chase one of those buffalo. And P.I. says, I don't know. Them horns will hook you.
Yeah. So, well, actually, so we went in Sunday, spent, you know, we was up in the north end of the park. I mean, we seen every animal except the wolf, and we missed it. The second day we were there, we actually just missed a pack of wolves. A buffalo had died.
You missed it, like missed seeing it. You didn't miss it with like a 300 wind.
No. So we seen every mammal that we would wanted to see. I mean, we seen buffalo or bison, elk, moose, mule deer, blacktail deer. We seen bighorn sheep, mountain goat with a kid. That was pretty interesting to watch them, you know, kind of ledge out. And some, I mean, it's just phenomenal how them things do not die at that height and the steep and
isn't it crazy?
In the side of the cliff. And the kid was just jumping from here to here to here. And I'm like, oh, that thing's going to fall. So we spent a lot of time. We took our binoculars and, there's a camera shop there, but before you go into West Yellowstone, and we kept seeing everybody with these big camera lenses and big spotting scopes, and they had yellow tags on them. We couldn't understand what it was. So we stopped in there and actually rented a camera lens and a spotting scope. Mm. So we spent a lot of time watching the wild. I mean, that was the majority of our trip was watching wildlife. We seen coyotes, coyote pups, and of course, antelopes everywhere. Grizzly. We seen 10 bear, and I didn't count the bear that we seen twice. We seen 10 grizzlies, one with a cub. Actually, yeah, one with a cub and then one with three cubs. And then we seen two black bear with cubs. Both of them had two cubs apiece. And one was a cinnamon. I mean, it was very distinctive. You can tell the color phase difference in it. We seen 8 black bear, 10 grizzlies. One of the grizzlies was actually collared and had a red tag in its left ear. We seen him twice. He was kind of hanging out in the same area. It was just a great experience for me. And, you know, I love being in the mountains. I love, you know, wandering. That's one of the things about bear hunting that draws me, is being able to just walk and go in places that people haven't been. And, you know, I can't sit still. And being
out. Did you ever get that feeling though? It's like what you talk about, walking into places you've never been. When you walk into some place like that, that's foreign to you, do you ever get that feeling? It's like, man, there's stuff here that'll eat you.
Yes. And it's kind of intimidating, mm-hmm. You know, here, you can cross a mountain and get to the bottom of it and find a creek or a road or vice versa. But out there, I mean, you're looking at miles and miles and miles.
Were you carrying an inReach with you or anything?
No. We in Yellowstone, the cell service was spotty. We didn't have it in a lot of the park. And then once you got to the major junctions, you could pick up cell service. And then in the Tetons, we pretty much had cell service the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But, just, you know, being out there and standing on some of those ridge tops, whatever you guys call them, and just looking out for miles and miles. And, you know, you see, you know, the open fields with the sage, and then you hit the rolling, you know, part ridges and stuff that go up. And it was very interesting about the timberline. You know, the timberline hits about 10,000, 11,000 feet, and that's where there's no timber. So we was Googling that and researching that, because here we have, you know, the highest point here is on, closest to me is Mountain Lake, and it's 5,200 feet. And, you know, we were out there, and I mean, the Grand Teton, 13,000 some feet. So,
yeah.
So it was just, I mean, it was an amazing trip. And so we go down to the Grand Tetons on Wednesday evening in Piddleman.
Wait, before you get away from Yellowstone, did you see any like Chinese tourists get hooked by a buffalo or anything?
So yes, not a Chinese, but I forgot to tell you the highlight of my trip is I got to fish. I got to trout fish in Yellowstone. I fished on the Firehole River, which is right above Old Faithful, and you can fish on different sections of the park. I didn't know this, so when we got out there, I started talking to. We stopped at a couple fly shops and talked to some guides and talked to different people and kind of put a game plan together. There was actually two fishing poles in our cabin, and we were just going to hit a lake that was across right up the road from our cabin. We were just going to go there and fish. And I stopped in a couple fly shops and talked to them, and they're like, no, absolutely. You can buy a 3-day permit. This is what you got to do. But the rules and guidelines out there are very confusing, because one river, you can't catch this, turn this loose, and the other river, you can't keep anything. And on this river, if you catch this, this, and this, you can't turn it back. So we picked the simplest part and we fished the fire hole, and we seen several people fishing throughout the first 2 days, Sunday and Monday. And I had picked out a couple sections that I thought looked really, really good. Mm-hmm. And, so we went and fished, and, you know, all the native species, they're not stocked like here. The fish are completely different than here. The stock fish are a lot tamer. They don't fight as hard. They don't, like, when you get your hands on them, they're not trying. I mean, these fish were like, I mean, they were like sharks, man. They fought. They were super aggressive when they hit. I mean, they was coming up out of the water 2 and 3 foot, you know, while you were trying to get them in. It was just, I mean, it was an awesome experience for me.
It's like an outdoor life moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really would like to go back to take like a 3-day trip. I'd like to fit and maybe wade fish one day and float fish one day and kind of see what happens. But I would really like to go back and do that. That's something that's on now. It's on my bucket list to do. So, yeah. So Monday we were at Old Faithful Monday, and now it was spitting snow and kind of a little bit of a drizzle rain. And, Tuesday morning when we got up, first thing we seen is where a girl from Ohio, 25-year-old girl from Ohio, had been killed by bison, excuse me.
Yeah.
And we got to reading about it, and it was in the Black Sands geyser area, which is between Old Faithful and where we fished. Like, we literally fished a quarter of a mile from where that happened. And it's, you know, such a small world. I ran into several people from Virginia. Talked to them. I was talking to one of the park rangers, and he had actually lived in Roanoke. For the guys that don't know, Roanoke's about 40 minutes from me, maybe. And he had worked. He was a retired Alaskan state trooper, and he had been transferred to Roanoke to basically track down fugitives from Alaska on the East Coast. But he was based out of Roanoke. So spent a good while talking to him. And you know, one thing that he said, and it just blows my mind, the lack of common sense, that these animals are tame because they see people nonstop, but they're not tame because they're still a wild animal. Every piece of material they hand you going in and out of the ranger parks, when you go in the park, all the signs, it says stay away from the animals. It stay at least 25 yards away. Do not approach. Stay away from the grizzly. Stay away from this. I mean, it's endless. It's endless. And I'm not 100% sure about the details of what actually took place, but there is So anyway, she was on a boardwalk, and there was a bull bison way too close to her. And he ended up attacking her and it killed her. And the park ranger said he actually like gored her with the horns. It went pretty much through her.
Them horns will hook you.
Yeah. So that was awful. You hate that happens. And, the buffalo, the bison are, they're big animals. Even when we were driving down the road and they were coming up beside us, I mean, they were giving you that look through the corner of their eyes, and I'm like, you know, we're in a car, but I still don't feel safe. Like, I really didn't. I was like, man, they hit this door. They're going to total this vehicle because they're just such a massive animal. So yeah, the fishing. And like I said, we fished about a quarter of a mile from where she had got killed. So that's very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And, you hate that for her and her family and anybody that was involved. So Wednesday evening, we drove to Tetons, which is about 65 miles south of Yellowstone, drove down, and it was kind of like a different atmosphere. In Yellowstone, we spent more time in the car driving and looking and pulling off the side of the roads, and the Tetons had a lot more campers, people biking. I mean, there was bike paths everywhere and hiking. Yeah. So Thursday morning, somebody had the wonderful idea that we were going to hike up to a place called Delta Lake, and Delta Lake's in the Middle Teton, and it's about a 4.5 mile hike up and, you know, 4.5 mile hike back. But we got up to about 8,500 feet and there was snow, and the park ranger that morning, when we come in, she asked us, hey, you know, what are y'all doing today? Well, we're going to hike to Delta. And she goes, oh, just be prepared. There's going to be snow. And Of course, they had shut down several of the trails because of the grizzly bear activity. She said the last month it had been really, really high. And I'm thinking, oh, great. You know, here we're going to get up there and run into a grizzly, a mama, and a cubs. And I said, you know, one of you kids are going to have to be sacrificed. She says, I'm pushing one of you down and I'm out of here. So we got down and we got up to about 8,500 feet. And of course there was snow, and the higher you went, I mean, the more snow. And I, like, some places where it was melting, I was falling through, it was falling up to about my waist. Whew. But Delta was actually unsafe. So we decided not to take the kids in there because a couple people had tried to get in there and come out, and we ended up going up the mountain to Surprise and Amphitheater Lakes, which is right at 10,000 feet. And it was froze over. So like one of the girls was like, you gotta be kidding me. We walked all the way up here and it's frozen. And there was a small avalanche while we were up on top that went down towards Delta Lake. So that was a good thing. We didn't get in there. But so on the hike up, we were probably, I don't know, we started at 6,600 feet. So we were probably in that 7,000, 7,500. Of course you carry your bear spray. You know, we talked and, you know, the air change didn't affect me like I thought it would. I was surprised. It was just being fat and out of shape and what hurt me the worst. So the air change was not a huge factor like I expected, but we all carried backpacks that had some food and drinks in it for ourselves. Like I said, I carried the bear spray. So on the way up, we seen marmots, we seen grouse, we seen, what else did we see? Anyway, so we seen one grouse, and that thing was fat. I mean, it was fat. Hmm. So we get up another half a mile up the path, and there's a grouse standing in the middle of the road or the path, and it kind of throws its head up. And I'm like, I've seen that behavior before because my dad's got chickens. Well, next thing you know, that thing's coming at us wide open. So all the kids start screaming. I jump up on the bank and I try to go up around the bank and up and around it. Well, that thing jumps up on the bank, starts chasing me around the side of the mountain. So anyway, I mean, I've got to like hurdle logs and I'm going over a rock ledge and I jump back down on the path and the kids have already shuffled up the path and I'm like, run, run. So we're running up the mountain. And I mean, literally this thing chased us for about 100 yards. I mean, literally for about 100 yards. So anyway, we get up around a switchback.
So it was like a Rhode Island Red Rooster chasing you around type thing?
Like very, very aggressive.
Well, I'm curious why you were running. Why didn't you just stop and face off with him?
Well, I just didn't. Well, I don't want to hurt it. You know, we're in a national park.
You were doing it for his sake. You were doing it for his safety. Right. I was saving the animal. Yeah. Okay. So I understand.
We get up around the switchback, and sure enough, man, we hear somebody screaming below us. So we're like, oh, they got attacked by the grouse. And we heard screams for like the next two switchbacks because it was right underneath us. And well, come to find out, she had a nest right beside the path. So she was being very protective. And on the way back down, me and Kenna had got out in front. We were with a couple from Ohio and we was walking pretty fast back down and somebody had set their binoculars down right where that thing was standing. And Kenna's like, well, somebody left. I said, you just keep walking, just keep walking, just keep moving. So we walked on and the rest of them, they were about 100 yards behind us. And sure enough, when they got to where there was binoculars, where they stopped, oh, somebody left our binoculars. And next thing we know, we hear them all screaming. We just started dying laughing. But
it was an ambush.
We did not get attacked or eaten by a grizzly, but we got harassed by a grouse.
Wow.
So that was the highlight of the Tetons.
It could have been worse, I guess.
Yes, it could have. I'll take the grouse over a grizzly any day. So yeah. Saturday, we were supposed to fly out. And, oh, Lord bees. We got up and was getting ready to head to the airport. And we stayed in Victor, Idaho, which was across the mountain from Jackson. And they sent us a notification that our flight had been canceled. We're like, what? I was like, well, let's just get up and go on. We'll go on down to the airport and figure out what's going on. We'll come to find out the plane had a mechanical issue It was going to be out of service. So everybody going to Salt Lake City that day was basically getting diverted, delayed. It was a complete cluster. We spent an hour and a half in the airport trying to figure it out. So we ended up keeping our rental car and driving to Boise, 3.5 hours west. And we actually stayed there overnight and ended up flying out the next morning, but we all got diverted. Our flight path was not the same. And because they stuck us on different flights, we were all separated in without the plane, which is what it is.
Yeah.
But Boise, so if any of you guys have been to Asheville, North Carolina, Boise reminds me a lot of Asheville. Just the environment, the vibe that you get from walking downtown, several breweries and restaurants. They've got the street shut off and where you can just kind of walk in and walk around. So it was a good experience. You know, I've never been to Boise and we enjoyed it.
Are there as many Subarus in Asheville as there are in Boise?
I would say that's a toss up. But yeah, so, you know, Boise, and they had this one alley that had been painted. If you walk down this, and I forgot, Scare Alley, I think it's what they called it. But it had like murals all on the buildings, down the sides. It's pretty interesting, some really good artwork. But
yeah.
Yep. So we flew out the next day at 5 and got home like at 9:30 that night. It was a long day, long trip. I hate flying. I hate it. Glad to be home and be back in the mountains, but it's hot. The puppies were probably the happiest to see us because they had been Chad that had done the podcast with us. He actually come up, him and Matthew had come up and taken care of all the dogs for me, which is a blessing because I have a lot of dogs and they just live, literally a mile from me. So Matthew would come up and take care of them while Chad was working. And I
thought that's good to have somebody that knows dogs, take care of your dogs.
Yeah.
You know,
and plus, with the police dogs, that's one thing people don't understand is with the police dogs, like I can board them, but it costs the department money. And a lot of people don't want to fool with them cause they're scared of them.
Yeah.
Chad and Matthew are great about helping out and they do like anytime I'm like vacation, they're usually my go-to unless Chad's out of town or something. So yeah, it's good. And like I said, we're back and dogs are going to try to start getting them out of the wheelbarrow mode. Cause that's what they look like right now.
How much do you think they changed in that 9 days that you're gone? Did you see any significant changes?
They look like they growed a ton. Yes, they look like completely different dogs, honestly. And, just being gone or whatever. But so the pups at this point, they are Friday. Yeah. They're going to be 18 weeks old at the end of this week. Okay. So they're past their 4 months. The changes that have went on in the last month and a half is unbelievable. They are really getting testy with each other. That pack order is really in play. And of course, if we catch it or see it, we do not allow that. We just stop it completely. But so
what are you talking about exactly there? You talking about fights over like a bone in the yard? You talking about food aggression?
Well, okay.
How are they establishing their pack order?
There's no fighting over food. And we'll talk about that in just a minute because that, we talked about Attica and we call her Attitude. It's over stupid stuff. Like the neighbor, she's got her horses down here. Literally right beside the yard. And the farrier was in here last week and he had trimmed up their hooves and stuff. Well, they've been carrying their trimmings back.
Right.
And then one of them will get it and then the other one will want it. And it'll start out with that growl. And the next thing you know, the other one starts barking and encroaching and getting in. And the next thing you know, I haven't seen a knockdown drag out fight. And we're on top of it pretty quickly. if they start that. So we're trying to eliminate it before it starts. I haven't seen a knockdown drag out fight, but I have seen a couple, you know, when they get in there and get started, you know, they'll go after it until we get on them.
Mm-hmm.
What does that entail?
What does that entail? I mean, you say you get on them. How are you actually handling that situation?
So I've not been rough with these dogs. And when I say rough, if you listen, I don't know which podcast Ariel talks about it, but you have to be fair for the age. So if they're in a serious fight, it's a little bit more aggressive. Like I'll get on them. I've got a paper towel roll downstairs. It's got some newspapers in it, and I'll take it out there. And I mean, I'll get on them. That is more of a shock or fear. It's not a pain thing. It's more like a pop, 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 pop. And I mean, it'll like, oh, okay. What are you doing here? And then I'll stand right in the middle of them. Like I claim that. Boom. Mm-hmm. I stand there. And then you'll see they'll just shake their head and then they'll wander off, start doing another thing.
Yeah.
So like I said, age appropriate if you're not fair with the punishment. So that's that. You can be too rough on them. And like I said, we're trying to stay away from the completely bad experiences.
Yeah. So you basically, with that paper towel roll, you're just creating a situation that is loud, that breaks their attention and redirects their focus on what the behavior you're trying to correct.
Yep.
I'll tell you one thing that I've always used is, and this sounds horrible, but until I explain it, but those yellow wiffle ball bats are amazing. But here's the trick that I've found. You go ahead and you cut the end, the other end off of that wiffle ball bat, and then you split it.
Yep.
Lengthways down. That thing is completely harmless, but I'm telling you, it makes so much racket and stuff that it absolutely gets their attention. It's harmless. I mean, you can beat yourself with that wiffle ball bat and you're never going to hurt yourself.
Yep.
And, but the noise, the dynamic, you know, they think their world is coming apart at that point.
Yep. And I mean, sometimes it's as simple as a touch, depending if it's just starting and I'm sitting out there with them and one of them gives that little snarl or growl, I just reach over and touch them.
Yep.
I give a little hiss when I do it. And that stops it. It's just to redirect, right. You know, okay, wait, all right, what's going on here? Just snap them out of that minute, that second. So I'm trying to be very fair about how I handle it. Trying to not to be, there has to be some punishment, especially, you know, for behavior. And, I haven't had the stretch out fights. I haven't had it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
And
so what do you call that kind of correction, Heath? Is it positive? Is it negative reinforcement? It, you know, what do you technically call that? Because you talk about this stuff on your podcast a lot.
Yeah.
So when you touch, just reach out and you can touch and you correct the behavior. What would you call that?
That's going to be more of a positive punishment.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting punished, but it's not detrimental. You know, mm-hmm. It's not, all I'm doing is redirecting that behavior. You know, if I'm looking at negative punishment, that would be the E or something that stimulates, or something that, you know, has a negative effect on the dog. So, yeah. We come home. When we got home Sunday night from out west, when I come out, you know, when I come out the road and I get ready to turn up the driveway, and like I said, you know, I live 200, 300 yards off the main road, which is a dirt road. All the dogs are standing down at the road at the barn. And I'm like, okay, it's time to start putting these boogers up. Cause Chad was coming up in the morning and letting them out in the evenings and vice versa. So they were doing that. And he knew I was going to be home, and I told him just to leave them out. So that's why they were out that evening. So that change, you know, they're at the point now where they're getting down towards the road. That's not, I don't want them down there. And so we are now, when we're not home, we put them up. Mm-hmm. And I've got them split up. I don't put six in a pen. Right now I've got three and three. I put three in a pen and three in a pen. I cannot put Allie, or not, excuse me. I cannot put Ari, which is, she's the alpha female of the bunch. No questions about it. She's the alpha, and she's the one that's the biggest. She's the one that looks like a Holstein cow. Like, she's huge.
Yeah.
And Attica. I cannot put them two together. And I, when I say that, I'm not going to put them together for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. It's not like they just fight and carry on all the time. But when you put them in a pen, coop them up for 8 or 10 hours, you know, they're confined to an area, they get bored. So I'm just trying to eliminate that interaction. That way I don't have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. So I separate them two, and I usually put one of the males in each pen, and then I'll put Allie and August. So let's start with August. August was the one that I told you that got confused the easiest, frustrated the easiest. That, you know, she was a little bit slower coming around than the other four, five. Well, that has completely changed. If you were going to pick these pups on looks and looks alone, you would pick mm-hmm. Axel and August. August is the best looking pup of the litter. Blanket back, really good confirmation. And I know Chad talks about that, and Ariel and I talk about puppy selection a little bit. And that's one of the things that we left out is I do look at the confirmation. Now, is it the end all to be all? No, but I do like certain things. And sometimes I don't have those certain things, and I have to understand if my dog is, you know, we talk about being cow hocked, or let's talk about their front end being down in their pasture a little bit and setting a little bit further back off their feet, and they don't have that good straight bone structure down into a cat foot. I have to understand that it's probably going to play an effect in the pads, how the dog runs, and the duration of the dog. Mm-hmm. So August is built, I mean, very, very well. She's got good straight legs. She's got really good feet on her. She's leggy. She's just a beautiful dog. So
but do you think that can change, Heath, is I mean, these puppies are growing. Their joints are developing, their bones are developing. At what age do you think you get to when it's like, okay, this is what I'm going to have for the rest of this dog's life? Is there a certain age that you've seen that?
I can't.
Or have you seen it from the beginning and seen it carry through the rest of their life?
Yeah, they'll tighten up a little bit, especially with exercise and, you know, with that, uh-huh. with the muscle structure. They'll tighten up a little bit, but these dogs are heavy. They're very heavy for me. And the reason, and I'll go into my pick in a little bit, but they're heavier than I'd like. So what I did is I actually cut their food back just a little bit. So I'm feeding them twice a day, still am. In the morning, I have cut their food in half. I'm trying to take some of that bulkiness just to kind of see. I want them to trim up a little bit and kind of see what it's actually going to look like. I mean, you know, we've been feeding them. I mean, literally, they're eating us out of house and home. I mean, holy cow, like a bunch of vultures. But so August, she's come around. She's still the pup that wants to be with you. She's the one that when everybody else gets tired of following you around, they go do their own thing. You look around and she's still following you around. Mm-hmm. She's the one that does that. But the other day, there was a rabbit up in the field. I told Maddie, I said, take the pups and walk up in the field and see if they'll fool with that rabbit. Well, she didn't. So I was sitting here doing something and I looked up. Well, all six puppies were up in the field and there's a drain pipe that comes down across underneath the road. And all the pups were up to that drain pipe. Well, I seen August start working and that rabbit come out of that drain pipe. And I seen August started where they cut hay. I seen her following the grass line. So the high grass where they didn't cut down to where they did cut. Well, she was following that grass line and she got up and again, I'm looking at this right now, just like I was the other day. There's a tree, there's a big patch of shade out in the field, and she was really like interested in that shade area. I mean, she was working and fiddling around. Well, the rest of the dogs stayed down here, and she was exactly where I seen that rabbit last. So that was like a really good I really liked what I saw there. I'm like, she's up there, she's trying to figure this out. She's doing it on her own. Nobody's asked her to, whatever. So she's really come around leaps and bounds. Again, she's the one that likes to stay the closest to you too. So that's her. She, as far as her temperament, she's not going to take a whole lot, but she's about the same size as Ari. She's a really big Jip. So she's not going to take a whole lot of bullying. So that'll take me into Attica when we talk about attitude. So I really got after the first one we done, and we was talking about her having an attitude and, you know, this and that. So I really started paying attention and watching. And I can't tell you the times that I've stood in the house peeking through the curtains to see what's going on, you know, to watch.
Right. Right.
So why Attica is so growly is they pick on her. And it didn't dawn on me to a week or two later after we had done the first podcast with talking about them. Like, she's the smallest. Her and Allie are the smallest. Allie's got a little bit of a size to her, but not much. But they pick on her. Like, she'll be over there minding her own business, and Ari will go over there and stand over top of her, which is a dominant, you know, I'm claiming you. And Allie will throw that head up, or Attica will throw the head up. And after I got to paying attention to it, like, she's defensive.
Mm-hmm.
She's being defensive because she gets tired of being bullied. And that's exactly what was going on with her. So once I seen that, that's when I started paying more attention. And when I saw that behavior with the other dogs, I'd go out there and stop it. That's another reason I don't put her and Ari in the same pen. Ari's the alpha, and she lets people know that she's the alpha. And I don't mean that by fighting. I mean, her behavior, her body language, the way that she postures sometimes. So I have put a stop to that as much as I can. Like I said, when I'm not here and they're in the pen together, it's hard to do that, but I'm very consistent when I'm here. I'm consistently watching the dogs. I'm seeing what's going on. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So Attica is not as bad as I thought.
Well, let me ask you this. So you talked about Ari posturing and things like that. Is that going to be a problem down the road? Because she's going to posture to the wrong dog one of these days. She's going to run into another Attica out there, and she's going to posture, and then the fight's going to be on. And when I hear you tell this, I'm thinking, here's Heath Hyatt, who has got tons of training in dog behavior and things like that, and it took you a couple weeks to figure out what was actually going on. So how often do we misinterpret what is actually going on? You take Ari, that just the little nuances, a little attitude she shows that may escape us, and the next thing we know, you know, we're mislabeling the wrong dog here for causing the aggression.
If I didn't have all these pups together, and if I'd have got rid of them at 8 or 10 weeks, like we normally do, I wouldn't be able to have this conversation because I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
And whoever gets her wouldn't know. But when you talk about, is this going to be a problem later on? Again, I'm being very consistent about stopping that behavior. I don't care if she's the alpha. There's going to be an alpha in the litter. There's going to be alpha male, alpha female. I honestly don't think I have an alpha male. Ash and Axe are very laid back. They're not as dominant. And when I say dominant, like I said, I'm talking about body language, her posture, and just her being the bigger dog. So anytime that I see her with those behaviors, I try to stop it. So I'm being as consistent as I can, and whoever gets her, which, Forrest has come out and looked at him, and I kind of feel he's leaning towards her, and there, when I'll talk about Ari in just a minute. He's going to know when he picks her up, I'm going to tell him, this is what you need to do, and don't let it get out of hand. That way we don't have those problems when the dog is 2 or 3 years old.
Right.
So Attica has, like I said, I figured that out, what was going on with her. I'm not having any issues, with her at all. Other than the play in the, you know how they'll play and fight and play, but you can tell, like, when they're play fighting, it's completely different. It's more, you know, they'll do the bow to each other and they'll, you know, run around in circles, and you can tell the difference in
right.
when I mean this and, okay, let's just go out here like brothers and sisters and have fun.
Right.
So Attica, like I said, there was a reason why she was doing what she was doing, and we've got that pretty much worked out. And I told you that she was like being very growly over the food. And what I had noticed with her also is she's a very slow eater. And like I set out 3 bowls, and they'll all go to 1 bowl and start, and then they'll spread out to 3 bowls, and then they're back to 1 bowl. And what was happening is, like, she's a very slow eater, so she would eat and they would go clean the other 2 bowls out. She would not move, and then they would come back and just try to gobble up everything she had. And she's like, no, this is mine. This is mine.
Yeah.
So, in the mornings when I just put a little food out, I don't even sit out there with them anymore because it's not an issue. In the evenings when I feed them more and they're going to be there more, we always stand there, don't have a problem. Once I started correcting that behavior, like I said, it's pretty much went away. Now, can that behavior come back later on? Absolutely. It can, but I know what's causing it. I know where it started, and I know how to fix it. So, we'll just stay on top of that with her.
So how are you fixing her? Are you picking up food, or are you taking, you know, are you denying food at that point to Ari, or how are you fixing it?
So I want to get into this too, with the training part, with some of the things I've done. So sometimes I'm putting the food on the ground. So each dog is working for their food. That keeps them occupied longer, and they're not over there trying to take her food. Is that
so? You're just scattering it out.
Yep.
On a clean, you know, I assume in the floor of the kennel, right?
No, putting it out on
the grass.
Mm-hmm. In the grass.
In the grass.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the grass is cut. I mean, they're not having to go through the hay field, but I'm also, we'll talk about training with that. So I'm also watching which dog stays after it longer. And I know that Ariel talks about that too in one of her podcasts, how she uses that to watch and learn. Like, she'll learn her pups. Like, once you throw that food out, and when I'm not dumping 2 bowls of food out, so don't get me wrong there. Like, I'm taking a handful or 2 handfuls of food, and I'm literally scattering it out like I would chicken feed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sit back on the porch and I see who picks out the food the easiest and then stops. And then I see who stays there even after it's all gone and tries to find it.
And what's that telling you?
That's telling me which dog I'm probably going to put my hands on for my trail dog, because they're more persistent. But when we talk about persistence, that can be a good or bad thing. If you've got a dog that's really persistent at things, they're the ones that's a little harder to break. Just like we talked about the slick train before. You know, when you got a dog that when he makes his mind up, this is the way it is, like, it's hard to fix that. So, I'm looking at things like that. And plus, you know, I posted a picture on the thing the other day about, you know, basically, you know, cognitive stimulation. The dog uses their nose for 15 minutes. It's like exercising them for an hour. And for puppies not to be destructive and to do things, we need to stimulate them. We need them to be tired. We want them to go and lay out here on the front porch and lay underneath the tree. So little exercises like that throughout the day or throughout the week keeps them stimulated enough where they're not chewing your house down.
Right.
So I use it for several different things, but, and again, if I'm standing there and I'm standing over, like I'm not even allowing that behavior to start in the evenings when I feed, like I'm literally standing over, and I've been doing this for, well, I mean, over a month now, mm-hmm. and I've been consistent, and I can't tell you the last time I had a growl over food. I can't tell you. I mean, it's been that long. So
yeah.
I feel pretty confident that we got ahead of that behavior before it started. Now, like I said, can it resurface? Absolutely. But and as long as I have my hands on them, we're gonna make sure that it's not a problem.
So it seems like this is a I know you want to get through all the pups, but it seems like this is one of those points that maybe needs to be recapped a little bit. So when you first started seeing this behavior coming on and you stepped in to correct, how physical did you get? How, you know, what did you do? And then how have you backed that off? Obviously you already talked about, you know, punishment fitting the crime, but really just boil it down to what you had to do to get ahead of the behavior to avoid, you know, anything growing into a bigger problem.
Yeah. So, and I know I said it on the first one, the first time I saw the behavior out of Attica, I don't know that I had made the rolled up paper towel with the newspapers. I don't know that I had that. I probably just took my hand and got on her, and I got on her pretty good. Like it was one of those oh crap moments for her. Because thereafter, one time, and that's why I'm telling you, I probably got on her too hard, because that one time, next time I walked up to her over the food, she started looking. Yeah, she started lowering that head. The eyes were looking at me like, oh crap. So then I was like, okay, she got the point. I don't need to do that. The next couple times that it happened, basically it was an at with a hard, it was like, it'd be like you throwing your keys at the dog, you know, boom, that's what it was. After a couple of those times, and that was over a period of time. It wasn't like the next three times I fed, like she wouldn't do it. And then she did it. And then, you know, she did it again. So it was a period of time. It wasn't like three consecutive times. And now, like I said, I would use my hand, because she knows when dad reaches out and touches me, I need to figure out what's going on. And you'll see the pups. I mean, not just her, but, even Ash is very soft. Axel is very, very soft. You raise your voice at him and he is like the world's coming apart.
Do you think, okay, this is a deep dive. Yeah. Do you think that is because they saw the correction that Attica got, and they saw, because dogs are visual learners too. Canines are visual learners. So you reach out there, they see this hard correction to a dog with attitude. And then all of a sudden it's like, they just related that gruff voice with a correction. And so now you've developed a situation with your other pups where when they hear that type of voice, they know what's coming.
Yeah. And I've noticed this, if you get on a pup enough to make it start yelping, the other pups, that's a verbal indication for the other pups. The other pups are like, oh crap, what's going on? And they do pick up on that. Mm-hmm. I don't recall her it being to that extent with her, on that first time. But I did get on Ari for barking in the pen one day, and I took the paper towel roll and a newspaper, and I went out and got on her, and come back in the house, and she started up again. And the second time I went out and got on her a little bit harder, and she just started squalling. The punishment was not, I think it startled her more so than hurt her.
Yeah.
And yeah. That time, all of them, man, they hit the back of the dog box and they didn't come out.
Right.
So, just seeing that, yes, you're right. Just watching that, the dog will pick up on what's going on. So I haven't had a problem. Like I said, I'm staying on top of it. And like I said, I'm doing the food on the ground. And you, I now take this, like, I'm feeding twice a day. So, you know, that's 14 times a week. If you do 7 days, I'm probably doing 3 or 4 of those feedings out on the ground. And most of the time it'll be my morning feedings where I don't have as much food.
Right.
So I'm not, like I said, I'm not dumping out and wasting a bunch of dog food. Another thing with that, and I'll go into part of some of the stuff that they've seen because this is part of it, is I will put the food in a certain location in the yard. I will use the wind to my advantage. I'll get downwind of it, and I will just start walking, and the puppies will start following me. Ari is the one that nose goes up. She starts working the air, and she'll go to the food first every time. But she's also the one that's one of the most persistent. When it's on the ground, she'll be out there a little extra long trying to find it. So I'm gauging. I mean, I can tell you, I can't tell you how she's going to turn out because I'm not, I may not be the one training her, but I can tell you that it is a good indication. She's got some of the qualities that I'm looking for. Like she's got some things that I want to tap into and see what she does. So yeah, Ari uses her nose the best. I've done 2 drags, scented drags, with an old piece of bear hide that I have. The pups did not see it. I drug it through the yard. I kept it in the shade. Like I said, we know that holds the scent better. 5 minutes, I turned the puppies out, and I walked in the opposite direction just to see if they would pick the odor up. Ari and Axel picked the odor up and went to it. Ari's actually the only pup out of the 6 that stayed with it 3/4 of the way. All of them smelt it. All of them would work it. But she was the one that would stay. She'd come back and piddle for a little bit, and she'd go back and she'd hit it and work it another 20 yards. And it's when I say this drag was not, it wasn't 40 yards long. Like it was not. It went from the back corner of my house around through the garden boxes. I made a hard turn on purpose, come through some higher grass and up to the big maple tree in the yard. So 40 yards, it may not be 40 yards, but very short. But she's the one that worked the biggest leg of that drag. Now, all of them smelt it, and all of them at times would work it a little bit. But she was the one that did the most.
Yeah.
And again, her behavior with the food on the ground, I'm not surprised. That's something I would have expected from her. So let's run to Allie. So Allie and Ash are they're the most even keel of the 6. They're kind of right in the middle. They're not at August's level a couple weeks ago. Like I said, August has come up. And they're not Ari and probably Axel. Axel, like I said, he still barks a lot. He's the more vocal one of the bunch. But Allie and Ash are the two even keel dogs. They're middle of the road. They're not better than anybody. They're not worse than anybody. Their personalities are really good. They're even keel. They don't get excited. Like things don't spook them as bad. Mm-hmm. And none of them spooks now. In fact, I can pull up I do it because if they're loose when I come home from work, they all meet me halfway down the driveway. And I will literally turn my siren on in my car and they stand there like, "What are you doing, Dad? What are you doing?"
Yeah.
Like now the first time or two, now they'd scattered a little bit. Yeah. But now it's like, "Oh, okay, Dad's home. Let's have a party." Like they don't even pay attention to it. Like that, it's so amazing that loud volume shrieking sound that drives us crazy. Like they could care less. Like they could care less. So I don't even do it anymore. I roll down the windows. I get out of the way. So when you talk about that exposure and stuff, but so Allie and Ash are the two most level, of the bunch. Axel is, I'm going to put him and Ari in the same category. I see some glimpses of things that for him, but now there's a couple things I don't like about him. When he walks, his back end like wiggles.
Yeah.
And what I mean is in his gait.
Swivel hip.
Yeah. In his gait, I worry about his performance over a long haul with that gait. And it may change, but he, like I said, he wobbles. Like when he, when he runs, he doesn't do it as bad. But when he's just gating around the yard and whatever, I mean, it's distinctive. But he barks more than the rest of them. He is the barker of the bunch. I let Pino out of the police car in the evenings when they're loose, and Pino takes off running around the house just to get away from them because they attack him. And he, like he's the one, all around the house. So going to have a babbler on her hands. We'll have to get a hold of that. So, and he's doing it a little less, and he's the one that barks. And when you put the dogs up in the evenings or when you're leaving, he's the one that barks more consistently. After 2 or 3 minutes, they all shut up and he'll be the one that's still out there cranking a little bit. So yeah, I think August, Attica, Ari, Allie, Ash, and Axel. Okay. So I've picked out the one that I want, and I will tell you, just like I told Forrest the other day, the only reason that I picked the one that I did, which is Allie, she's the medium keel, was because she is built tighter than the others. That's it. She's no better than the rest of them. She's no worse than the rest of them. She don't do some of the things as fast as the Attica and Ari. She don't do it as some of it. She don't do as fast, but she's built tighter. She's not as big and heavy boned as they are. And that's it. There's no, you could pick and you could grab down in this litter and take one of them. And I feel like you would be just as well satisfied if you picked any of them. So that's my pick. Our pick. I mean, the girls, the fan, everybody, that's the one they want. And like I said, her and Ash's at her, their personalities just kind of stand out. They're more personable. They just have really good personalities. And like I said, she's not as big. And the difference in her and Attica are about the same size. Allie may just have a, I mean, just when I say a little bit of height on her, I say a little bit. Ari's got like an inch on all of them. Is our Allie's bone structure, especially up front, is pretty straight, and her feet are a little bit more, a little tighter than Attica's. So that's my pick. That's why we, I picked the one I did. And then Forrest is going to pick one or two, and then I'll pick another one, which I'm afraid that I'm going to end up with Attica. I'm getting pressure from someone about taking her because they don't, they're worried about somebody getting her and her.
She needs you.
Yeah. That's what I've been told. But now she's smart. I mean, she's really smart. Like I said, that independence, golly, I mean, it worries me. Like she's still the one that's off by herself most of the time. And like, when the neighbors go up the driveway, I've got a right of way through me to my neighbors. When the neighbors go up the driveway, they're getting where they want to run out to the end of the driveway and wait. Like I, if I'm home and I hear them coming, I'll just step out on the front porch and say, come on guys, come on. And they'll come running up on the front porch. She's the one that don't, she stands out there and waits and waits. And when the car comes up, she'll run up to the garden and then she'll come. So very independent. That independence, I'm not seeing. If she was doing some of the things that Ari was doing with the nose work and stuff, I think I would be better with it. But I'm not seeing that. So anyway, I'm probably going to end up with her. And we'll just see how it goes. So some of the things that I've done with the pups over the last month, month and a half, or however long it's been, 2 months, whatever, whatever it's been, is, they've been on numerous walks with Maddie and me and the girls. They've been back to the pond numerous times. They all took the water. They don't care. They'll get in and swim and piddle around. We have taken two at a time on short trips. They've been in the truck. They've been to the trash dump. They've been to the DG. I haven't taken them for long hauls, but they have been, you know, 5 miles, 10 miles, probably, you know, it's three. So yeah, they've been 5 to 10 miles. They've not been further than 10 miles. But there's been several reps of that went on. They've been up in the back of the truck numerous times. In fact, next week, I'm probably going to start feeding them in the back of the truck. But I'm going to have to fix it where they can get up there because they can't, they're not able to jump that high yet.
Yeah.
The flirt pole, which you hear Ariel talk about, we've done that some. We have not overdone it. I did it when I got back from being out west just to kind of gauge where they're at, where their maturity level is.
So I want, I listening to that podcast with Ariel, I heard her talk about the flirt pole.
Yep.
Describe in detail what a flirt pole is.
So for us, and it could, you can make it anything you want, but for us, it's like she said, she uses a horse whip. She takes the string on the horse whip, she tie a string to it, and then she puts on the item, a ball, a rag, a coon tail, a piece of bear hide.
How long?
It can't be so long that you can't control it. So I would say 3 foot, 4 foot at the most.
Okay.
So my flirt pole actually is a flirt pole we ordered from a police canine distributor. And my flirt pole is about, the pole itself is about 3 foot. And then the string is a little bit longer. So I'd say the string is 4 foot. Mm-hmm. And then on the end of it, mine has a piece of leather. And the reason we use the leather is because the puppy's teeth are soft and we don't want to pull their teeth out. So it's soft. They like to bite it. And we just use that pole to, I mean, just give the dog, give the object movement, and the dogs, you'll see that prey kick in. They want to chase. They want to chase. So, but now when I say flirt pole, I'm actually upgraded till I've got a 20-foot piece of string, 5'11 cord, and I've got a 1 foot by 1 foot piece of bear hide tied to it. And I don't even have the pole. I'm using my hand. And I know that, you know, you get six pups pulling on a piece of hide. I mean, I wear gloves all the time, even when I'm working the police dogs. But that's what I'm using. And yeah. I am, and Ariel, in the, you know, the second podcast she talks about, I put a little bit of bear scent on it. And you can't replicate a real bear. We know that. But if you can get some of that scent for those dogs to start processing it and being a fun time, you know, right. chase it. They get to play with it. I've used that, and I can't tell you, maybe a handful of times, maybe 5 times. I've done 2 drags out of that 5 times where the pups was able to try to work it out. And it's okay. This is one thing that's important. It's okay for the dogs not to find it. Okay. This is a part of the learning process. It's okay for the dogs to fail. You don't have to walk the track with them and put them right to the end of it. It's okay. It's part of the process. It's a part of them learning how to use their nose.
But you want them to win more than they lose, right?
You don't want them to lose to the point that they're getting deterred. Correct.
Right.
Okay. So if they're not doing it, put it up and don't do it for another month. That's how you fix that. You don't, you know, don't just keep doing it. Like I said, most people overdo those things. And Aaron and I talk about the visual stimulation and, you know, how it counter affects us wanting the dog to use their nose. I've done that a couple times, and the dogs have not found the end of it yet. They haven't found the end of it yet. But the next time I take the hide out, I take it away from the drag and I put it into motion and let them chase it. And then I let them grab a hold of it and play tug with. And when I say play tug, I don't mean picking them up off the ground like you see some of the police dog. Like, it's soft because their adult teeth hasn't come in yet. So, yes, I balance that back and forth to lose. Yes, win, you both back and forth. So we've done that. I do put odor on it. So the dogs, I can already start prepping them for what I want them to do. So we've done the drags and the flirt pole. We've done the pond. We've done the short rides. And Maddie informed me as of Monday, we had our first speed beef race.
Oh.
Yeah, you know how them Holsteins are. So
yeah.
They had the pups back at the pond and they were swimming and everything. And she said that Ari
yeah.
had come out of the pond, and she said she started looking up on the ridge, and Allie and Attica all took off up in the woods. Well, the next thing you know, Maddie sees a deer standing there. And then all of a sudden, the deer starts snorting and stomping, and here come the pups running back down over the hill. So,
right.
And then the other dogs.
The doe with a fawn.
That's probably exactly what happened. The other pups got involved, and they went up. Well, here come the fawn flying down through the edge of the field. They all take off chasing it. Well, it turns and goes back up in the woods, and they ended up losing it. And anyway, Maddie realized that the doe, like, was not happy. So she starts gathering up the puppies and come on, and takes them back over the hill. So, yeah, we had our first off game race at 17 weeks old. So I guess that could be promising. But so that's kind of where we're at with the pups. Like I said, the next phase is going to be loading. I'm going to start feeding them in the truck. And then when I say in the truck, there's no dog box. It'll just be just up in the back of the truck, getting them comfortable, getting up on the tailgate. And I can pull my truck. I can back it up real close to my house, and there's like a berm where it's just like a foot difference in the tailgate in the land, the ground. So that's going to be our next phase. And we'll go from there. I think three of the dogs are going to end up leaving here pretty soon. Like I said, they are eating me out of house and home. So I need to, and I want to concentrate on what I'm doing with mine. Like I said, they're easy right now. I mean, they all kind of work together. So like I told Forrest last weekend, I mean, he's like, man, it's so hard to pick. And I'm like, Forrest, there's no big difference in them. Even with August, which was be my last pick, I don't think you'll go. I think at this point she's showing, the same interest as the rest of them. Like, she's completely flipped. She's doing a good job. She wasn't as gamey when we was playing with the flirt pole 2 weeks ago, I guess right after I got back. I mean, she was all over it. Like, mm-hmm. You know, it was like, okay. She does still get a little nervous around some things, but she recovers really, really fast. So that's the pups. Yeah. That's the update. And like I said, I'll try to add some pictures here and there to the Houndsman XP podcast group, just to kind of keep you guys updated. And somebody asked me the other day, said, you're going to be ready for them during training season. And I'm always the one that's probably a little hesitant about taking my young dogs out and putting them in that environment. At such a young age. So maybe by the end of September, I may carry them a time or two. And then when I say a time or two, that's what it'll be. And, you know, December, they'll be 10 months old in December. So they may get a little bit more exposure. I may lead them in and do this and do that. But so that's kind of where we're at.
Well, how do you think... The whole time you're telling this, I mean, we're talking about pups. How old did you say they are now? Four months old?
They're
18 weeks.
Well, they'll be 18 weeks come Sunday. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, you've spent a considerable amount of time watching these pups. And when you talk about it, it sounds like, you know, when we dial down into the details, it sounds like there's these huge differences, but really there's not. You're just looking at it from a hypercritical eye, breaking down each pup. You've talked about strengths and weaknesses and all that stuff. So you've really got a pretty consistent litter of puppies. You've just had the luxury of watching every move, you know, every move they make and evaluating them in every aspect.
Yeah. And again, like I said, my preference was because of the build, not because of the actions. They're all almost equal. I mean, Ari is using her nose better than the rest of the litter. Ari is. But the rest of the litter uses her nose too. She's just a little bit ahead of them. there's not a huge scale difference. Like you're saying, there's not that absolutely stand out, I don't want this.
Right.
You could give me any pup in this litter, and I feel like with time and the training that you're going to have just as much luck as with any of the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel. I mean, there's not a big difference in them. The things that I am telling you are micro. Like, it's because I'm watching three of them right now. They're 150 yards up over on the ridge, up on the hill. I don't know what they're doing. One, it looks like Axel's up on the bank fooling around. August and Ash, and I don't know what they're. In fact, they just went out of sight. But I mean, there's no difference in them. I mean, really, no huge difference. There's no disqualifying factors that I would say, nope, don't want this. Mm-hmm. I don't have that. And I'm not saying they're all going to turn out either. I can't, you know, next year we'll have this conversation again and kind of see where we're at. But I can't tell you that they're going to make it. I can't tell you they're not going to make it. But I can tell you that they're a pretty even keel litter of puppies.
Mm-hmm.
But we have spent a lot of time on them.
Well, it's one of those deals where, are we getting rid of puppies too soon? I mean, are we as breeders, are we getting them to that magic age of weaning age? And it's like, get them out of here and ruining our chances of success. Or we, as breeders, are we not spending enough time? I mean, what's your opinion on that?
Well, I think it's twofold. I mean, you know, in the state of Virginia, you can't get rid of you're not legally supposed to get rid of a pup until it's 8 weeks old. I'm very fortunate.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. I'm very fortunate. You know, Chris, you've been in my house, you know where I live. Like, I can raise a litter of pups and let them run loose the majority of the time. And, you know, my neighbors are 200 yards down the hill from me, and they're really good neighbors. They don't fuss and complain about my dogs. And if my dogs are down in the yard, you know, if they're down there for an extended period of time, they'll call and say, hey, you got two dogs down here. And I'll yell, and they'll come back up through the horse field. And so I have I'm lucky enough to be able to do this. If we're talking about developing young dogs, I will be the first one to say that I'm guilty. There are certain things that I like to see by a certain age. And if I don't see those things, I lose interest. Mm-hmm. I'll be the first to say that. Now, if I see those certain things and the dog's not a rock star at a year and a half old, I'm more likely give that dog some more time because I see the things that it's showing me, some things that I need to see. And I know that when the dog puts it together, like, I know what I know what I should end up with. So, with pups, it's expensive. I mean, we have wrote down every dime that we have spent on this litter of pups. And if I'm just being honest, between dog food, they're all up to date on their shots, their worm medicine. We're at about $1,200. About $1,200. So, and we're not selling these. Like, they're going to us. It's expensive, and I understand that too, especially with the dog food prices skyrocketing and, you know, building materials for houses and this and that. I get it. Like, I get it. It's not cheap, but if you do have the opportunity to do it and you can spend some time with them. And again, I mean, Ariel talks about it, you know, the dog's they can't be confined to the four walls of that pen. And
that's where
I'm lucky. I can turn these dogs have been loose. Like, they do not like to use the bathroom in the pens. If I put them up all day today, when I come home this evening and let them out, the first place they go is to the field to use the bathroom. Yeah. And I think that contributes from being out all the time.
I'm telling you what, and that's the way all of my hounds are. They will not. It's a last resort type thing. And I've seen other dogs, if you don't clean your kennels and you let a dog live in filth, they will be filthy animals. Yep. But if you get them out, you keep your kennels clean, that's their space. They don't want to live in it any more than you do.
Nope. That's right.
If you clean kennels out every day, you'll have clean dogs. You won't have those crap slingers that are walking. Yeah. They will avoid it.
Yeah, that's true.
We create a lot of that.
Yep. But so guys, that's kind of the lowdown on the pups. That's where we're at. Maybe wait to the end of summer and give you another update, and we'll just keep, pecking right along with them and keep you updated. And hopefully a couple of these out of this litter end up being what we want. I do feel, and I'll say this on the record right now, I like a dog that's got good speed, top end speed. With their bone structure and as heavy as they are, that's one of my concerns. I'm not going to say they don't run and do this and do that, but at this point, I've told this to the people that's going to be getting them. I'm a little leery about how fast they're going to be, and fast don't always win the race. I get that, but I like my dogs to put good pressure on game and make him climb. And I worry because they're so heavy built that this is going to be one of the things that I'm not crazy about.
Yeah, there's a lot to, this was a good conversation. There's going to be a lot of takeaways in this one for sure. And then you've been really killing it with the guests lately on, I hope people are catching what they're picking up what you're putting down here. There's so much knowledge out there about dog training, and if we just continue to look in the same places over and over for success, we're never going to get anywhere. And when you hear people like Ariel and Chad and you've got some other really good guests coming up that I know of, man, we need to be finding those nuggets of wisdom and then applying it to what we're doing with these hounds, and we'll have a lot better success rates.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, and it's a process. Like I said, that's why we come up with the journey, because it's a journey. Like this litter of pups, I'm going to raise another litter probably the end of this year, maybe the first of next year. They're not going to be the same. It's going to be a whole different ball game with a whole different litter of pups. So,
yeah,
we'll go through that one too. We'll that's my intentions, is to tell you guys what I'm looking at, the things that I'm doing. And it's not the way, it's a way. It's just something that I've picked up. I take a lot of things from my police dog training into my hound, especially the select. Like, we can't be successful in the police world if our selection's not right. And the selection for the dog and the handler. Well, in hound world, the handler, it's not a choice. You decide you're going to get dogs and so on and so forth. That don't mean that that selection process in the hound part is, we don't even do that. But if you don't select the right dog that you need, then you're not going to be successful.
I'll tell you what, that could be a whole different podcast. But I would argue with you about that a little bit, about the selection of the handler. I think it comes from within. I think it's from self-awareness, knowing what you can handle and what you can't. And that's part of the journey too, is learning that part. But like I said, that's a whole different topic. Yep. So
yeah,
I think we can get there. We just got to keep talking about it.
Well,
and exploring it. I really do.
Well, we got some good guests coming up. A lot of experience, coming up. One of the guys that in the next couple of weeks, you'll hear him. Like, he played a vital role in our tracking, training, and success. His knowledge of scent and how it works is phenomenal. And he started out bear hunting. So you want to tune in and listen to that one. And then we're going to talk to some people that do some scientific studies and research, and that have been a part of some of the research around the country with other universities. And so, yeah, I mean, we're just going to keep adding to it and, giving you guys information. And like we said in the first one, it's going to be like a buffet. Take what you want, use it, put the rest of it in the microwave, keep it warm in case you need it.
Oh, man. Well, hey, instead of rolling out an announcement separate from this podcast, I do want to talk about a couple things, but Go Wild that sponsors the journey. You guys have been super engaged over there on Go Wild, and it's really cool to go in there and see the people that are logging their time listening to the podcast. And if we just took the engagements from our listeners and did the analytics on what's being posted, what people are listening to over on Go Wild, we'd be like the number one podcast in the world. You guys, they've been super about doing that. And by the time this episode of The Journey comes out, then we're going to be getting into the final days of this giveaway that we're doing with Go Wild. We're going to give away a Dakota 283. And every time that you listen, and you have to listen, okay? Because I'm telling you, these guys down at Go Wild, if they see, you know, 8 hours of podcast come in 1 hour, you're going to get flagged and you're probably going to get booted out because they won't be scanned. So you got to listen, and then you got to log your time over on Go Wild. And then we're going to take all of those hours that each person listens. Every time you listen, you get a name in the hat, and it ups your chances of getting drawn for this Dakota 283. And then it's going to ship direct to your house. So super giveaway. We're really happy to be partnering with Go Wild and that team over there. They're really supportive. And I don't know why anybody is still posting. I get so mad and frustrated about other social media platforms. I don't know why anybody's wasting their time posting stuff on other social media. They're just harvesting your data and selling it to people that want to kill us. You know, I don't get that. So all of my stuff is going on Go Wild, and they listen to what we say. I mean, when's the last time you can't send a message to Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook and expect him to change anything for you, but we can do it on Go Wild. We've done it. We're shaping the community over there for Houndsman, and they appreciate us. So I can't stress it enough. Get over to Go Wild and start building that community. It's built for us.
Yeah. I'm using it more and more, especially, you know, logging those hours. You know, I spend about 6 hours a day when I fish. That's about my limit. I'm logging that information on there to gain points. And I have a goal. I mean, I need to buy me a couple new collars, and I'm trying to get my points built up so I can get, you know, that 20% discount. And, you know, I'm logging all my outdoor activity pretty much. That's where I'm putting it now. And just, guys, be patient. They are trying to catch up with the hound world. This has been something that they're not experienced in. They'll tell you that. And we have flooded Go Wild with our activity. They are working on it, and they want us to be a part of what they're doing, and they want to be a part of what we're doing. So if the equipment doesn't pop up, if something's not there, send them a message. And like I said, I can promise you, because I talked to Brad the other day, they are working on it. This is something that they're playing catch up right now with it, because you know, honestly,
they didn't know
how big the hound world was. And
no.
You know, we are a big part of the hunting community. And like I said, they realize that they're glad to be a part of it. And like I said, I'm using that platform a lot more than I'm using the other platforms right now. So
let's talk about that shopping app real quick. You know, there's a shopping feature over there, and as you gain points by posting, you get different discounts. Okay. So as you go, yeah, I see you. As you go through this thing, then you're going to gain those points. They've already got Garmin there. They've already got Dakota 283 there. They've got boots, Irish Setter boots. The other hound equipment is coming. We are working on that with them right now to develop the equipment that we all use, that we're familiar with, and get it on there. But it can't happen overnight. We've only been working with these guys for, what, a couple months? A few months?
Yeah.
Yeah, and look what they've done for us already. So patience, it's coming. Don't be blowing up Go Wild with you know, hey, I'm not finding a set of Dan's chaps on here. It's coming. Something's coming.
Yeah.
So we're working on it.
Yep. All right, guys. So until the next trip around the sun, we will get back with you. Like I said, got some good podcasts coming up. Hope you guys listen, tune in. I believe you're going to really like these guests. I enjoy learning. That's why we do what we do. That's why it's called The Journey. So guys, find a way to teach, train, and learn.